This is Like Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Political analysts around the world are trying to make sense of two major developments, the success of Donald Trump's candidacy in this country, and to a degree that of Bernie Sanders, and also the Brexit vote in the UK.
There are obviously some key differences, but writer and Milwaukee native Sandy Tolan thinks there's one major factor at work in nearly all the stories of voter dissatisfaction around the world. That factor, he says, is globalization.
Tolan, who's written several books and covered world affairs for more than three decades, focuses on globalization in a recent essay for the website The Daily Beast. Lake Effect's Bonnie North reached him via Skype, and he explained how he arrived at the conclusion he did.
My own experience as a journalist over the last 35 years and reporting in, you know, more than 40 countries, seeing what the effects of global economic policies and global integration and export strategies and things like austerity, these sort of vague terms that come with words like efficiency and best for all and the wisdom of the economists and business leaders. And what we don't see in general, but what I've seen a lot of just because of my own career going along the back roads of globalization, you could see, is a lot of pain. And when I started seeing this Brexit coverage saying that, you know, it's all a bunch of racists or old people who don't care about their grandchildren that are voting, they're just angry, or they're Trump-like supporters, obviously not Trump supporters themselves in the UK, but of the same ilk of people who are simply xenophobic and racist and basically out of touch with a modern globalized world. You know, there's an aspect to that that's true, but what I've seen on the ground is very different. I mean, globalization has basically benefited the wealthy. It is sort of written and advertised as something that's beneficial for all. But as you're beginning to see, both in the United States in terms of the people who've been supporting both Trump and Sanders, and what you're seeing in the vote from Brexit, is people aren't just buying that. They don't see what globalization and what all this economic integration has done for them. And from my own experience over the last 3.5 decades, traveling all over the world and visiting, you know, people who are really hurting, it just isn't always the case. In fact, it's often not the case.
It's often the case that they're not helped by it, is what you're saying.
That's right. It's often the case that people are not at all helped by globalization. If anything, they're hurt. I mean, I've traveled across these back roads of globalization, from Mexico to Bulgaria, from Egypt to Ecuador to Central America, American Indian country, across the Middle East, India, and parts of Asia. And what the whole mantra of free trade says is that it's going to lift all boats. But for example, let's take Ecuador as an example of this this phenomenon where so many ordinary people don't benefit. Ecuador is a huge resource of oil. I mean, by comparison to countries like Iran and Saudi Arabia, it's a tiny drop in the bucket. But for a tiny country the size of Colorado, it's a substantial resource. So you would think if it was wisely developed, it would benefit the country. But what's happened instead is the country has been turned inside out by oil. There have been thousands of oil spills throughout the rainforest in the Amazon. Indigenous people have been driven out of their homes. The rivers have been poisoned. They've gone downstream into Colombia across the Ecuadorian border. There's been a pipeline that's built across a sensitive cloud forest. I mean, there's just, it's environmentally and socially, it's been a disaster. And you would think, well, at least they must be getting money for their coffers, for the state budget. But in fact, what happens is the country, just like so many other countries, goes into huge amounts of debt to finance these projects, and then ends up having to give much of the raw income to the companies, the oil companies, and others who finance these projects. And then what little they have left, most of that, in the case of Ecuador's recent pipeline, 80% of what's left goes to pay off the huge external foreign debt that the country has provided. So basically, this is how a country gets turned inside out. And the net transfer of wealth is not actually going to the South, or in this case, Ecuador, but it's actually being transferred to the wealthy countries. So you're seeing this kind of pattern with resources really all over the globe. And so when people see that their resources are not actually being preserved or developed in a responsible way, people get less and less enchanted by this notion that globalization is good for all. There's another example I could cite that's happened all over the world, which is the whole notion of austerity. Countries are told that in order to join the global economy or to remain in the global economy, they have to, of course, borrow money for investments, but then they have to pay that back those investments. The World Bank, and in the case of Europe, the European Union, the EU, and sometimes the United States are all calling for austerity measures. And that's a very euphemistic term to describe what some people call belt tightening. But it's one thing to call something belt tightening, and it's another to actually understand what it is. I mean, what from my travels, what the kinds of things I've seen is, you know, people taking to the streets to protest the elimination of bread subsidies for poor people, for milk subsidies for children, poor children and working families, transportation subsidies, maternal leave, child benefits, shuttered hospitals and kindergartens are resulting from these kinds of austerity. There's a lot of evidence that around the world, people are beginning to say, wait a minute, what is this globalization doing for me? What has it done for me lately, for the common person? If it was done in a way where austerity was reduced to a fraction of its impact, and people were actually benefiting from these kind of trade deals, not to say that it never happens, but far too often it doesn't benefit people. You've seen the export of jobs in the United States. So that's one of the reasons that, for example, both Trump and Sanders have been popular this year, because people are actually sick of the sort of status quo movement towards these unchallenged free trade agreements.
And people have said that was a lot of the anger that was behind the Brexit vote in the UK, that you had the sort of the central England, the working class, the traditional working class, had suffered under austerity and was just wanting a change, was just needing a change. There have been people who have suggested that they took it out on the wrong group, that really it was their own government that caused a lot of that. But do you think that that is because the government is so tied into this global economy?
Well, it's really hard to separate the various roles that governments and political alliances like the EU or NAFTA, for that matter, which is part of, you know, it's an alliance between the United States, Canada, and Mexico, that, you know, where one nation's policy ends and the policies of another alliance, or you could add the World Trade Organization, many other alliances, begins, because each country basically agrees to the rules of these trade alliances. And when, for example, in Greece, if Greece wants to remain part of the European Union, they have to agree to these austerity measures. A lot of people in the UK were also very upset about the austerity measures, and that is part of what was imposed upon the UK. But it's also, you know, maybe not in every case is it justified to blame the EU, but it's part of the whole package of global integration that people are becoming more and more frustrated by.
So what do you think the answer is? I mean, it seems difficult for me to believe that we could put the genie back in the bottle. Is there a way to make what appears to be a global economy more fair to its constituent parts?
I think so. I mean, I think what has happened is that the political and business elites of the world have created a system that's good for them, that's good for investors. Investors are very much in favor of things like austerity because they want to get back a return on their investments. It's very natural that they would want to get a return on their investments. But when it comes out from the hide of ordinary working people who did not create this problem, that's when we have to re-examine it. So I think one thing is free trade can give way to fair trade, and that means leveling the playing fields between especially third world countries and the first world, but also as part of that, looking at the pain of austerity and of putting countries in such great debt that they have to produce and produce and produce their own goods just to pay off the debt. So I think that is the kind of thing that actually can be implemented by changing the kind of rules that have been written to the advantage of the wealthier and investment class. And, you know, it's not a coincidence that Donald Trump, although I find him to be quite disingenuous, and Bernie Sanders, who I find to be more on the money in terms of the analysis, have identified this anger within the American electorate, which is true around the world. People want a more fair system. You know, Sanders wrote an interesting piece in the New York Times very recently urging the Democratic Party, but you could say this for people around the world, to make clear that we stand with those who are struggling and who are left behind. It would be naive to say that we couldn't turn that principle into policy.
One of the words that gets tossed around is like, you either are for globalization or you're an isolationist. And isolationism is by definition bad. Do you think fair trade will take care of that, where you can both maintain your own economy yet be connected in the way that we need to in order to have the trading partners and the trading relationships that we have around the world?
I'm not an economist, but I have traveled along the flotsam of, you know, through more than three dozen countries, watching the impact of the global economy on the poor and on working people. And I don't think, and nor do I hear anyone talking about how we have to shut down trade and close all borders. I agree that is an isolationist strategy, and it also is a strategy to promote ignorance and prejudice and fear of the other, fear of migrants. That has been one of the real bad effects of the Brexit vote. But you can have both fair trade and relatively open borders by examining the ways to make the relationships between countries, especially between rich and poor countries or richer and poorer countries, more fair. I mean, the alternative is just letting the system kind of run havoc. I mean, you have people, you know, in the Dominican Republic, Haitians that I met, they're paid a dollar for every ton of sugarcane they cut. You know, you have all kinds of people who have been completely left out of the global economy except for in a very exploitative way, where they're producing the labor for the goods that we want, but not getting anything close to a fair shake, a decent life. I spent a lot of time on the U.S.-Mexico border, where all these young people came up, basically free trade refugees, around the time of the NAFTA Accord that was passed, you know, it was promoted by President Bill Clinton in the early 90s. I mean, you had essentially free trade refugees, a lot of people coming to the border. And around that time, I spent a lot of time on the border where people were living in cardboard boxes and the pallets of the parts that that were shipped into Mexico for these factories at the northern edge of Mexico. They were not very well regulated. They didn't have the ability to form unions. The health and safety standards were lax in these factories. I met a young kid, 15 years old, who had his finger cut off working in one of these factories. They lived in these shanty towns, you know, and if they were lucky, they got $5 a day. And this was right across the edge of the United States. Now, this isn't all the result of exploitive U.S. corporations and terrible policy, but that contributed to it. And the terms of trade could be set so that people could have better lives. There's, you know, we're seeing the result of that not happening, and we have time to do a course correction.
So do you think we will? I mean, I guess that is the question I wonder. It feels that this anger is building and that we're looking at a lot of disruption.
Yeah, we are looking at a lot of disruption, a lot of fury. And right now, I mean, partly because I think the so-called neoliberal model, which is this model of austerity and free trade to benefit investors principally, not liberal in a political sense, but the neoliberal model has been promoted by conservatives and sort of mainstream liberals themselves, Tony Blair, Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama to an extent, promoting trade pacts that have not actually benefited a large certainly the majority of people. So what's happening now, if, for example, the Democratic Party does not recognize what signals this is sending, what signals the Trump campaign has sent, what signals the Sanders campaign has sent, what signals Brexit is sending, then the danger is that all of this anger just goes to the right. It goes to the nationalists. It goes to the hyper-nationalists, the nativists, the racists. And that all gets mixed up in a kind of anti-immigrant toxic brew that's terribly dangerous for this country and for this world. Whereas if the progressive agenda included embracing a fairer deal for everybody, and that includes the standard bearer for the Democratic Party, which we can presume will be Hillary Clinton, I think we'd have a fair shot. It depends on whether people really listen to what the message is.
Sandy Tolan, it is always such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks for getting in touch, Bonnie, and look forward to talking to you again soon, I hope.
Milwaukee native Sandy Tolan is a longtime journalist, author, and professor at the University of Southern California, USC's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism in Los Angeles. He spoke with Bonnie North via Skype. You can find a link to his article for The Daily Beast at wuwn.com.